Hello and welcome to The Conduit Studio. I'm Paul Finsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a diverse community of people passionate about positive impact. We're recording this conversation live from COP26 as part of our efforts to bring you cutting-edge content, insights, and expertise throughout the conference. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Miguel Vega Pestana, Head of Corporate Affairs and the Chief Sustainability Officer at Reckitt. Miguel is responsible for all aspects of strategic communications, brand and reputation management, as well as overseeing the development and integration of Reckitt's sustainability and purpose-led agenda. Prior to joining Reckitt, Miguel was Chief Communications Officer at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and held several regional and global communications roles at Unilever, notably as the Vice President for Global Sustainability Strategy and Advocacy. Miguel has more than 25 years of communications, external affairs, and sustainability expertise, having held positions in the UK, US, and Brussels. Welcome, Miguel.
Wow, thank you, Paul. Thanks for the very detailed introduction.
Well, you have a very detailed pedigree working on sustainability.
Thank you.
So I'd love to know what you're here at COP. You're obviously representing a really important global brand. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you're doing, what you've been announcing, and what have been the main milestones you've achieved so far.
Yeah, happy to do that. Look, I think first and foremost, we're a strategic partner. So we're one of the 11 companies that is a strategic partner to the UK government. And for us, the thing that's been most important, we're the hygiene partner. So a hygienic and safe COP has been one of our top priorities. So for anyone who's here in Glasgow, both inside the venues themselves, the so-called blue zone and the green zone, it's really been important and of primary importance to us to keep everyone safe. So been working a lot behind the scenes to support both the UK government and the UNFCCC in how we ensure that we do that. I think second things for us, I mean, we are a consumer health company. And a lot of our brands, you know, the Dettols and the Durexes and the brands like Strepsils or Gaviscon and things like this, these are brands that you use in order to improve people's health and well-being. And hygiene is one of those things as well. It's kind of the basis of health. And so for us, we've been trying to put the spotlight on the critical overlap between both climate change and public health. Self-evidently, the world is going to get warmer. It might only get 1.5 degrees warmer. That's the plan. That's the hope. But it certainly could be a lot warmer. If that's the case, then we know that the burden of disease will spread. We've done a piece of research that we commissioned with the London School of Tropical Hygiene and with the EcoHealth Alliance that really sort of tries to make sure that we don't lose sight of that. Been interesting to note that health was not one of the days that was picked at COP. So we've had, you know, days on different thematic areas, but health was not one of those days. So one of our sort of rallying cries, alongside lots of other organisations like the WHO and others, is to say we actually should do, the next time we get together at a COP, we should have a health lens. And just to give you some rough numbers, I mean, there's about 13 million deaths now kind of associated with environmental factors like air pollution, for example. We'll see an increase in air pollution or infectious disease like malaria. So we know that this is going to be a critical issue. But then we also know that the healthcare sector itself, which is already under strain, is going to be more under strain. And they, as a healthcare community, have a lot of work to do to green themselves. So we're also talking about what kind of investments do we need to be making in basic healthcare provision, but also in how we green healthcare. So that's kind of a big, big topic for us. And our second big topic has been around consumer behaviour. I think it's interesting that the UK Climate Change Committee recently talked about the fact in one of their most recent reports that the conversations we've been having about climate change in the last decade or two have essentially been about infrastructure and technology. And capital flows that are needed to shift towards, creating those sort of that sort of decarbonisation and that acceleration towards the use of technology that is going to help accelerate decarbonisation. But what we also know is the next decade, if we're really going to make the progress we need to make, is also about shifting mindsets. And it's shifting behaviours. We're going to have to change our lifestyles and the way we consume, the way we use. And I think companies like ours, which are consumer-facing and have many brands, which hopefully people use every single day, and we sell 20 million of them every day, we have a pretty important role to play in how we incentivize people to behave differently in a positive way and recognize what our kind of obligations are, particularly as we sort of shift to more sort of circular economy. So the other thing we've done is we've published some research with Teneo. And that research focused in on one small, tiny example, which is that people don't necessarily understand that when they wash their hands, particularly if they're using soap, it's as efficacious to wash your hands in cold water as it is to wash them in hot. And so the idea was that we could just signal to someone that actually if you wash your hands for 20 seconds in cold water, you actually save energy and it actually can make a small contribution to addressing climate change. So we did this as a sort of a small test of the kinds of things that we ought to be doing in if we're going to really encourage people to make these shifts.
So if you're going to move, I mean, we had our very first conversation was with Jeremy Oppenheim from Systemic, and one of the things he said, which echoes exactly what you said, is that a shift in consumer behavior is going to be absolutely essential to get to net zero. Some of them are the small behavioral nudges of the type that you've just pointed out, shift to cold water, hand washing, small little incremental habits spread across billions of people across a bunch of different habits can really add up. Mm-hmm. Give us some examples of the kind of circular economy stuff that you at Reckitt are thinking about that would be less wasteful, more efficient, and I'm sure you're at the forefront of sort of advancing what those might be.
Look, I think everybody probably, if you were going to ask people where do they see the need for more circularity when you're talking about consumer goods, they'd probably tell you it's in packaging that we need to do something often about plastic. And clearly there's a big shift in how we promote the use of more recyclable packaging, more reusable packaging, and that I think is going to be one of the areas that we all need to start thinking about, because that requires us almost to create a completely reverse logistics supply chain at a global level, because essentially we are it's about things, and historically you've had a linear way of getting things into people's hands. Now you have to find a way of getting things back and back into the cycle of production. So it's kind of reverse, almost like completely a reverse logistics system that we're having to create. Alongside that, I think there's lots of examples of what you need to do to help people be able to do that, to make that choice, because there's still an element in all of this of people wanting you to take responsibility on their behalf. So how you green your supply chains, how can you actually, for example, ensure that you're thinking about the biodiversity impacts of your value chain. What is it you're doing to ensure that you're addressing the livelihood issues in the value chain? Because so much of the environmental degradation that we're talking about is often connected to the livelihoods of those communities and how you can create jobs and incomes that don't make that the only choice that people have. So these are really complex issues that sit in your upstream supply chains and value chains. And what people are looking for from us is you need to be addressing that, because that's part of circularity. Circularity isn't just at the end. It's the entire value chain. It's everything from the beginning, from the choice of what you're using, where it's coming from, and the conditions under which it's produced, to how you manufacture. So that's about greening our production, our factories, and how we use renewables in our factories. And pretty much, we have renewable energy right across all our sites in the UK, in Europe, in India. It's how do we sort of deliver that across the entire footprint of our business. But then it's downstream. It's how do you make green transportation systems, distribution. People actually increasingly want convenience. One of these, what we call omnichannel, you want it at different points in the day at a given moment. And we, for example, we sell Durex condoms. And one of the things we're doing at the moment is, you know, we can deliver you a Durex condom within 10 minutes of you asking for it. Well, there's a whole value chain there that you have to create, but you also ultimately have to green. So this is kind of where I think most companies are trying to sort of find the roadmaps, kind of find their way through this. And in some ways, it's where the opportunities are, but also where some of the big challenges sit.
So I wonder, there's a big debate about the shifting of consumer preferences. Some people say you can get people to shift as long as they don't have to sacrifice either cost or convenience or quality. Mm-hmm. So if you give me an electric car, it goes the same speed or a little faster, it mm-hmm. doesn't cost me more, it's just as good a drive and I like the style, I'm gonna shift to electric cars if you tell me that they're better than internal combustion engines. Mm-hmm. But if you tell me I have to travel less or not take an overseas holiday because aviation is 6 to 8% of global emissions, depending on whose numbers you believe, then I'm going to be less inclined. Now, you're a consumer goods business. Mm-hmm. So do you think it's your mission to change consumers' preferences, even in some ways, in some circumstances, that it makes things harder for them? Or do you think it's your mission to give them better, greener products at the same competitive price, knowing that there's a kind of climate or philosophical tension in being able to have your cake and eat it in both of those choices?
Yeah. Well, look, I would argue that some of the things, a lot of the brands and products we sell actually have a positive impact on people. If you're selling someone a product that improves their health and well-being, or if it's a condom, actually reduces the risk of a sexually transmitted disease or spread of HIV, which can be incredibly debilitating for not just the individual, but for their family unit. This is a net positive contribution in its own right. So actually selling more Durex condoms is potentially, I would argue, is intrinsically a good. So you have a conversation about what the role of a product you sell is, I mean, the net benefit it provides. Clearly, though, what you have to then think about is how do you make that product and more sustainable in terms of the materials that you're using, the packaging that you're using, the way in which you can get, you know, you can start to close that circle. So there are opportunities and there are responsibilities that come with that. And that's looking at that, how you get that balance and strike the right balance is ultimately what we're trying to do. I am not someone I think who, I think it's going to be very difficult. I think one of the biggest political challenges that we're now confronting is that we are going to get into a place where we're going to have to make some choices and trade-offs about the kind of lifestyles that we lead and what kind of signals we send people and whether or not we can achieve that purely and simply by encouraging, raising awareness, creating a better understanding of people's impacts when they do certain things. Clearly, there's a role for that. But I think we're also going to acknowledge or have to acknowledge that we're going to need some regulatory oversight of this because it's going to involve some tough trade-offs. That's one of the challenges that most politicians are confronted with. Sometimes these things are good for the planet, but actually if they're seen to be politically difficult sells, you know, that's the tension that you see emerging.
I'm going to ask you as a sort of final question to do some prognosticating. And that is, you're sitting in COP, you've been a main sponsor, you've thought deeply about COP in the run-up to it. When you look back from the perspective of 2030 to today, what do you think today's deliberations will have be recorded in history as having done?
Well, I think firstly, having been here and, you know, there's been an awful lot of speculation about whether this would be a successful COP and if you don't have the Chinese here or, you know, are you able to make the kind of progress with some of the commitments that have been made. So my sense is that people that I've encountered here are leaving with a heightened degree of optimism. There is a shift And certainly from a business perspective, there's been a lot more engagement directly with business here than I've previously seen. So I think there's some good news in that. I think also we have made progress, but not enough yet. I think there's also still a delivery gap. And I think anybody who's witnessed the announcements that are being made on, you know, every single day, we see more and more sectoral commitments and pledges being made. That's evidence of progress, and there's a lot that we should celebrate in that. But we will probably leave COP with half of the journey delivered. So I think it means we know we're going to have to keep coming back, and we have to drive the momentum inside by, and business has to be part of that, driving that accelerator, driving the momentum that's necessary year on year. So for me, COP is a good start. It will certainly kickstart more action. That's my firm belief. But there's certainly more that we're going to have to do. And I think we're probably going to be having these conversations every year from now on.
In my conversations with you, I've been struck, this is genuinely the last question, in how deeply you've thought about the sustainability journey. And I've often said that chief sustainability officers elsewhere and companies trying to think about a path of purpose should take a look at what you're doing, not copy it, but think deeply about the process that you've been through. So can you just direct people to some materials, a website or something that you can kind of look at the sustainability policies or paths or approaches adopted by Reckitt?
Yeah, of course, happy to do that, of course. I mean, and firstly, thank you for the kind words.
Yeah.
I think that in many ways, I look at my job and I literally want to talk myself out of my job. Mm. I will only know I've succeeded if I'm not in the job I have in the next 5 years, because it will just be an integral part of the day-to-day way of doing business. And in so many ways, people like me wouldn't be as necessary anymore. But that is still part of the journey, right? We're still on it. In terms of how we've approached it, I think we actually almost went back to the drawing board, and I've had the benefit of a new incoming CEO who had a very strong sense of direction and purpose of where he wanted to go with the business. And we started with, at the heart of everything, what is the purpose of the business? Why do we exist? And we actually really, really started with that. And then that's driven a lot of what follows, you know, the direction of our strategy, the way that we've looked at the kind of cultural transformation that we want to go on as a business. So much of this is about leadership, and it's about the kinds of people that you want to bring into the organization, the talent that you need to succeed. I was talking yesterday to my chief marketing officer and saying, actually, if I look at marketing, we probably need behavioral scientists now inside our business, to help us understand how to shift those consumer behaviors, and not just the creative marketing community that we've had. So how do you start to bring that new talent pool, and what more do we need to do? So a big focus on people and culture, a big focus on that kind of core purpose and core, how that underpins the strategy. And the third pillar is, how does sustainability fit in it? And my strong view was we never ever have talked about a sustainability strategy. We've talked about sustainability ambitions, because there's only one strategy inside the company. There aren't two. And our ambitions, we've done as much as we can to kind of really understand what the footprint might look like in 10 years, projected forwards, and then try to understand what are the stepping stones that we need to get to deliver against that. Had a lot of conversations about what the trade-offs are, what some of the issues are, what the costs are. And now the journey for me is, how's that fully integrated? How do we operationalize that and standardize it? Because there's still a huge amount of conversation to be had about how we measure and report and evaluate all of this. So lots to do, lots of things that we still have to kind of figure out. But yeah, you can check us out on Reckitt.com, and there's a lot of information that sits on that.
Fabulous. And we'll post some of the documents and stuff on the show notes. So Miguel, thank you so very much. I look forward to having you back and to deepening the conversation, and good luck in the remaining days here at COP.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning into this conversation, and don't forget to keep an eye on the Conduit social channels for the upcoming content from COP26. For more information on the Conduit and our community of change makers, please visit theconduit.com.